As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Greetings and welcome back to One True Pod, the Athletics Big 12 podcast. I am Max Olson. I'm joined by my fine colleague, Jason Kersey, our Oklahoma beat writer. Jason, what's up?
Oh, man. I love hearing you say my name correctly. That really warms my heart.
I think we need to lead this podcast off with a disclaimer, really, honestly, with an apology. Jason, to anybody who listened to last week's episode, we made a grave mistake. We both went 0-5 on our picks, and that was real bad. We had Oklahoma covering 22, didn't happen. We had K-State plus 10, really did not happen. We had Oklahoma State covering 2.5. It was kind of close. Didn't work out. Oh, we missed our chance to bet Kansas.
I was doing that early in the season, and I gave up.
We missed our chance to bet Kansas. And then West Virginia plus 7 wasn't close, no. You know? So all losers. To make it worse, I went on Twitter and I bragged about my record on picking Big 12 games this year. So honestly, I hopefully nobody bet their hard-earned money on our foolishness. That was an all-time low for us.
Well, the thing is, no one should have been listening to me. I mean, given my record, which is what I told you when we talked yesterday. This is not weird for me. I've been terrible all season. You're the one having this crisis in your brain about your.
It is. It's hurting me real bad.
You should have just sucked all year.
This would be one of those. Like, we could make excuses and we could say, oh, this is the Big 12 and it's unpredictable. And, you know, some of these outcomes last week were definitely ones that, I don't know, they felt pretty extreme to me that I didn't see coming, at least in terms of the results. But I mean, no, I think we just screwed it up.
I really hope nobody put money based on what we said.
They didn't bet their kids' college fund or the cash they'd set aside for Christmas. I hope they didn't.
It's okay, honey.
That being said, I have advocated for picking against you every week, so hopefully there's somebody out there who did that and made bank.
Yeah. It's okay, honey. I really trust these two guys.
These two guys. This obscure Big 12 podcast that I listen to.
We're
going to
double our money.
So, yeah. You know, fortunately, nobody actually like tweeted me and said or emailed me and said, wow, you lost me a lot of money, so... Hopefully no one's actually taking us seriously.
I hope not. We are going to make picks this week though, guys. We're still making picks. We're not backing down.
Yeah. We're not backing down. We will talk about Texas on this podcast and the failed coup in Austin to replace Tom Herman with Urban Meyer. We're going to be joined by Brian Davis, the longtime Longhorn beat writer for the Austin American Statesman. So we will get into all of that as best we can. On this Wednesday.
Failed.
Still don't know what's going on there.
Failed coup is such a great way to put it because that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, it's not in some ways similar to when Dwight tried to replace Michael a little bit. a little bit.
So who's Jan in this situation then? Delcani is Jan? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not totally right. I mean, Urban's not going to be doing Tom's laundry for a year. So
yeah. It's
not really an apples to apples comparison. Yeah, right. But what can you do? So we will talk about Texas, but why would we lead a Big 12 podcast with the Longhorns when we can talk about Iowa State, baby?
You're damn right.
Number seven.
That was
in the playoff rankings.
That was
what a time to be alive, Jason.
I love it. I know that there's a lot of people who are like apparently deeply offended that Iowa State is ranked number seven. I've seen a lot of it on Twitter, but you know what? They are playing.
I'm fine with being offended on the behalf of Coastal Carolina. Like Coastal should be higher for sure.
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, holy moly. It's like the committee like has totally forgiven the Louisiana game, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because that's kind of how it should be. I know that game wasn't close, and I know Iowa State was at home, but, you know, Louisiana keeps rising up the rankings. And, you know, a lot of these teams in the SEC didn't play non-conference games. They didn't go out and schedule the literally toughest non-conference game they could find like Iowa State did.
Yeah.
I love that they're not getting punished for that at this point.
I just think this is a weird year, and things are going to be weird, and especially early in the season. It's just you have to be able to forgive things like that. Now, you know, especially when it's a team that's done as well as Louisiana has. I don't know if I'd feel the same way if this was Kansas State we're talking about, because the Arkansas State loss looks much worse in retrospect than the Louisiana one does. But no, I think it's awesome that
I'll tell you what, though. Kansas has lost to Coastal, looking pretty legit now.
Put the Jayhawks in the top 10.
Oh my God. That Coastal BYU game was phenomenal. I don't know how much you
caught of that. I didn't get to see much of it.
You were probably up in the press box, right?
I didn't get to see much of it. We all sort of watched the end though, because there are TVs. You've been to OU. There are TVs right behind there.
Yeah.
So we were all sort of turned around watching the end, but I didn't get to see much of it. It's incredible.
Man, it was great.
More of that. More of that, please. More short, you know, no more scheduling games 15 years in advance. I think we can all agree that that should be a thing of the past.
Jason, do you think that since Iowa State has won more games than Ohio State has, that they should jump them?
Yes. I feel very strongly about this.
I'm so tired of the Buckeye discourse this week, man. I just
it gets me
real salty.
Me
it
too.
Really does. And I like that team. I enjoy watching them. I'm just the freaking out over what do we do for Ohio State is I just don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. There is a difference, but I mean, we are talking about putting a team in the college football playoff to play for the national championship that will have played half the games as the other teams. And that is just absurdly unfair. I mean, less chance for your best players to get hurt. Even the players that aren't injured are still banged up. It's just a different, and this year especially, there's not going to be a month to heal up between the championship games and the bowl games. There's going to be a week or two. So it's just not right. And I'm sorry for Ohio State players. It's not their fault, but it is the Big Ten's fault. The Big Ten made this decision.
100%.
And they miscalculated the situation in August, and that's nobody's fault but theirs. And so I read a column Matt Baker, the Tampa Bay Times, wrote that I thought really made a great point. 6 years ago, the reason Ohio State jumped TCU and Baylor is because they had the extra data point. And then this year, the committee is saying that data points, you can have half as many data points.
Right. Well, that's the weird thing, right? So it would be great to see Ohio State play 10 games. It's not because we need to see them play 10 games to know they're a top four team. It's in case they lose one of them, as they have in the past, right? Against Purdue or against Iowa. And as we've seen with the the Big 12 teams, Iowa State's a good example where, you know, there's going to be some weeks you don't play your best football and you lose a game. And I'm not saying Ohio State wouldn't have gone undefeated this year. They're really, really good. I believe that. And honestly, cynically, I just assume they're going to get in no matter what, because the playoff doesn't have any rules. They don't have any game requirements. They just pick whoever they think the best four are. And Ohio State has done nothing to disprove that they look like a top four team. But man, they're already in the top four. Like, what are we whining about? Why do we have to, like, you know, change the rules or move the schedule around or do all this stuff to accommodate them? They're going to get in anyways.
Yeah, but they shouldn't. but they shouldn't, is my point. I don't think they should, because
I'm not going to correct
you. I just feel like you can't. I understand the eye test. I understand the recruiting rankings. Ohio State is the probably the only team that legitimately is up there with Clemson and Alabama in terms of their talent. I understand all of that. But if that's how we're going to pick the playoff teams, then stop wasting our time. Let's just get the committee to fly around in the preseason and watch everybody practice, and then they can tell us who the four best teams are, and then we don't have to waste our time with this bullshit. We just don't have to waste our time with it, because it's just ridiculous. Wow. And it triggers me very much as well.
Clearly.
So
strong words from a strange man. All right, let's get back to the clones.
I'll take it.
They clinched before they even played, and then they put together another dominant performance against a West Virginia team that we both thought would play them close. Yes. That was really, really impressive. And I think that's why Iowa State jumped, honestly. I think it's just when you watch them, I know people tend to use the term eye test to talk about the teams with the best recruits, right? In this case, we're seeing Iowa State play really, really good football. And there was no, you know, letdown performance after beating Texas and kind of winning that big, you know, kind of landmark game for them this season again. No, they've just went home and played another great game against a really good defense. And I can't wait for this Big 12 title game against Oklahoma. I think it's going to be, as good as the first one that they played against each other in Ames.
Yeah, it's really cool. Just first of all, I just think it's just very cool to see Iowa State get to the Big 12 championship game. Because Matt Campbell has done it the right way. He's such a likable guy. They're a likable team. I don't know. It's just really neat to see.
1912, man. I mean, 1912. That's the last time they won a conference title.
Yeah.
You know, that's the coolest thing about this sport is as much as we fixate on the playoff and the four best teams and how, you know, that's usually the same group of five or six teams every year. That's the fun of this sport is when teams can go and do things that were thought impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun, and also that fan base is just awesome. I've been covering, you know, Oklahoma for several years now, so I've been to Ames four or five times, and they're a great crowd. They're great fans, and they're so loyal. They come out year after year and watch this team without much payoff, and they deserve it. And so I think that's awesome. And I also think that, and I've been guilty of this too. I think many people have. I don't know about you, but a lot of people I think have assumed as Oklahoma has gone on this run of just whooping people that, oh, well, they're going to beat, you know, when they get in the rematch, they're a more talented team. They're going to beat Iowa State, you know, whatever. It's been a nice run. And I don't feel that way anymore. I did feel that way. But after these last 2 weeks, I don't think I feel that way anymore. I think Iowa State can very well win that game.
I think an important distinction there, we pointed this out before, but in 2019, Baylor finds a way to win a ton of close games, right? And kind of gets the ball bouncing their way in a few of them, survives that TCU game right before they go, you know, play in Dallas. 2018, Texas wins a lot of close games. And so it's kind of been this thing where, you know, one of these teams in the Big 12 title game is just the one that, there's some teams that just sort of split all these close ones, and there's one team that rises up and wins all of them. That hasn't been the case lately with Iowa State. I know the Texas game is close, but I think the K-State and the West Virginia performances show you this is a team that can kick some ass. It's not just sort of surviving tight ones and just barely getting through. They've had close games, but I just think it's really impressive. And especially when you start where they start in terms of the recruiting talent, and it's really, really hard to build the kind of depth that this team has, and they've just built a really likable cast of leaders and players on this team. It's just a really it's pretty cool to see the Matt Campbell blueprint not just come together like this, but then actually be rewarded.
Yeah. And man, we can talk about talent or whatever, recruiting, but they've got some damn good players. I mean, damn good players.
Yeah.
And I have to say, and I think I said this last week, Brock Purdy has been awesome. He's been really, really good the last several weeks. It's been sort of the Brock Purdy I think we all thought he was capable of being maybe a year or two ago. He's been that guy. And Breece Hall, You know how I feel about Breece Hall. Charlie Kohler sure. is just such a good dude and fun to watch. And
when that offense, when all the pieces kind of fit together, and they do a great job play calling too. Campbell and Manning do a great job. But when Purdy's right and he's really hitting, the way that they can balance you and spread you out, and you know, they work in the RPOs. That, you know, obviously they don't have the most talented receiving core in the conference, but they make plays, you know, and that tight end group is just special. It's just something that nobody else in the league has. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And then they've got great players on defense too. I mean, this is a really good team. And
it is.
Man, I bet they wish they could have that Oklahoma State game back though, because Oklahoma State's, you know, taken such a nosedive. It seems kind of crazy right. to me now that they lost to that team, oddly enough, you know, but
yeah, that was, you know, and that's sort of a 50-50 game. You know, I mean, I think that one could have bounced either way in some ways.
And
so,
where
yeah,
would,
if they,
pardon me, but where would Iowa State be if they'd won that game right now in the playoff hunt? Where would they,
yeah.
probably behind A&M
yeah,
and Florida.
It's interesting. I think it's probably a little more compelling if they'd played an easier non-conference and the one loss was Oklahoma State versus mm-hmm. if they were a one-loss team whose only loss was Louisiana. That's a little... Even though Louisiana is ranked, maybe a little bit tougher sell just in terms of the resume. But, I mean, where would they be?
I mean, I would imagine...
Right there with Florida?
Right there with Florida. Probably still behind A&M, but right in the mix.
So maybe one spot ahead of where they are now.
Yeah, maybe one.
Maybe it's not a huge difference. But
maybe it makes a big...
They would be a conversation.
Yeah.
We would be comparing them against A&M. We would be talking about what are the scenarios where, you know... And frankly, you would be comparing them in Ohio State
yeah.
and saying, if it comes down to it for the fourth spot, who's the more deserving team?
Yeah, and what, you know, one loss versus two losses. I mean, winning the Big 12 championship, you know, maybe more likely to elevate you above a one loss non-conference champion A&M, but having two losses yeah. may make the difference. I don't know, but I mean, that's kind of what happened.
It'd
to
be Ohio. Wild if we were living in a time right now where Iowa State was a one loss team. And we were talking about should one loss Iowa State or two loss Clemson be in the playoff or something like
mm-hmm,
that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
man,
it's wild.
They were close.
It's wild.
They were close.
But good for them. It's just been really fun to watch them this year. I've really enjoyed it.
I have too, and we will do plenty to preview that game next week. I have no doubt about that. Jason, where do we go from here? What did you think of Oklahoma and just? Mm. You know, I expected them to roll. I've been praising them for a while here, ever since Red River. It's looked really, really easy for them.
Yeah.
That game against Baylor was a little bit of a weird one. What did you take away?
It was a very weird game. I mean, the game almost got canceled. I think we all know that. I mean, it was sort of
right.
up against it. And OU's previous game had been postponed. They had a lot of COVID problems. The facility was shut down. All those things are true. But yeah, the offense was, I mean, it was the worst offensive performance since Lincoln Riley's been at Oklahoma. I mean, going back to 2015, it was the worst, statistically and just watching it. It was clearly the worst. They couldn't do anything. Baylor was really active up front, put a lot of pressure on Rattler, shut down Ramondre Stevenson for most of the game. And it's just the weird bizarro world sort of thing is that the defense was unbelievably good.
Yep.
And made a huge difference. And so it's just been a strange game.
And we're just so used to seeing Lincoln have an answer for absolutely everything as a play caller,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's right. That's right.
I'm not saying he got out-coached. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that usually with Oklahoma, the way they're constructed, whatever you take away, they hit you with something else.
Yeah. Well, this was a great – I mean, we're talking about Lincoln Riley and Dave Aranda. That's a pretty great meeting of the minds there. And we saw what Dave Aranda did to Oklahoma in January or in December last
year.
Yes,
that's right.
He came in with a great plan. Lincoln didn't really have an answer for it. And then I think the pandemic and the shutting down and those things probably made a difference too. And Lincoln took a lot of the blame for this after the game, basically saying that coming back from the break, the shutdown, he didn't practice them as aggressively as he should. They sort of lost their edge. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that has something to do with it too. But I also do have to say, Baylor is much better than their record indicates. I know that's sort of a tired cliche, but it's the truth yes. in this case. Baylor has not been blown out this year. I don't think. They haven't been blown out this year. They've been beaten by 10, 12, 14 points, but they haven't really been blown out. All their losses have been decently close, and they came ready to play in this game. And so I think you got to give them credit. And you also have to sort of think that Dave Aranda's got this program in a decent place despite their record.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're right. I think since the, you know, really since the Texas game, I think they've been playing, TCU was close, but they've been playing close games with everybody. They gave Iowa State a really good fight. And, you know, and probably, you know, should have won against Texas Tech. So, I think that if you're a Baylor fan, obviously it's been a very frustrating thing to go from, you know, second back down to the bottom of the standings here. But you make a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Aranda did have OU all figured out in that semifinal. Now, it helps when you have an offense that can score 60 points. But, you know, I thought that was impressive from that staff. And they're going to be better next year. That's probably a coach where you can write it off and say, look, 2020 was 2020, right? Mm-hmm. And we can, you know, we learned about our players along the way. We had some weird setbacks. The record doesn't really reflect the improvement.
Totally. And they had their weird COVID issues early in the season that they had to work through. I mean, this has just been a weird year, but I don't think that, I mean, I think they've got a really good shot to beat Oklahoma State this weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting where Oklahoma State's at right now. And that, look, TCU, the TCU game, huge win for TCU, very back and forth game. Really, really wild. Really, I mean, it was fun to watch. But Oklahoma State is in an interesting place now. Because ultimately, and it's the same thing as is going on in Austin, in the sense of this was going to be the year, and there's just a disappointment when the year when you have all the pieces you think you need, it doesn't add up.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State is in a very interesting place because there was with regard to Mike Gundy, because he's the greatest coach in their program's history, and it's not even close. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he's done since he's been the head coach of Oklahoma State should be commended, and the program would not be what it is without him. They win 10 games fairly regularly, or they did for a while.
Sure.
135 and 67 in 16 years. For Oklahoma State, that's unbelievable. You know, it was during Mike Gundy's era that the all-time Oklahoma State record crept up into a winning record. For most of their history, they've had a losing all-time record. And so, but he's also 2-14 against Oklahoma. And he, in those games, often makes very conservative he's accused of being maybe scared in these games, whether that's true or not. Now they've gone on this streak where they just looked awful. And I think fans are starting to get fed up, and to the point where it's gotten so sort of toxic. And then there was all that stuff in the summer that we haven't even discussed today.
Right. Yeah.
But now they're doing all this, and it's like,
it's a hard position to be in because I was asked about this on radio a week or two ago, because I think you make a mistake when you say Oklahoma State can definitely do way better than Mike Gundy, right? You know where I live, right? You know what happened when Nebraska thought they could do way better than Frank Solich, and it's been close to 2 decades of mediocrity since then. Now, I shouldn't say that. Bo Pelini had his good years, but, you know, it's been 20 years of trying to get back to playing for a conference title and winning a conference title. And so it can't, you know, Oklahoma State can be a 500 program under the wrong coach, right? And so it's a hard thing to say. Yeah, it's can this get better? Is it time to give it to somebody else to try and take it to a higher level, or is that a little too risky? You know, I mean, when do you know it's time?
Yeah. Well, it feels like the relationship between Mike Gundy and his alma mater has been teetering for years. I mean, there was that run where it felt like every year he was talking to somebody else, sure, or he was flirting with Tennessee, flirting with Baylor, flirting with Arkansas. I mean, there've been all those sorts of things, and him and Mike Holder, him and Boone Pickens' relationship. And it all seemed to sort of start to come to a head this week. I mean, Mike Gundy's oldest son had a very impassioned Instagram rant where he talked about, I think he said that Oklahoma State can't do better than him and they'd be nothing without his dad. You had a very sort of, I don't know if tense is the right word, but an exchange between my friend and Garen Emig of the Tulsa World and Mike Gundy during his press conference this week, where he was asked about not making the Big 12 title game, which it is kind of crazy that they haven't been in the game. And his response was essentially some form of, well, what's the difference whether you win it or you either win it or you're if you ain't first, you're last, is essentially what his response was. And I don't think that set well with Oklahoma State fans who believe they absolutely should be in the Big 12 championship game and they should have been this year.
Yeah, it's a hard assessment. And you know, look, the OAN thing this summer, Oklahoma State's leadership used that as a chance to kind of flip the leverage there, where now the buyout is not so significant. So I'm not saying change is coming or anything like that. It's just, this is going to be an uncomfortable offseason, I think, for Oklahoma State to figure out, what is the 5-year, 10-year plan here? I think it's an uncomfortable time, I imagine, in some ways too, in Lubbock. I think that, it's still early, obviously. But this was a really frustrating season for Texas Tech. And I'm curious, from all the time you've spent watching them this year, what do you make of just where Matt Wells and his staff are at after 2 years at Texas Tech?
I mean, is it similar to what we, I mean, well, Texas Tech wasn't competing for conference championships under Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, I don't want right. to maybe overstate or compare him to Frank Solich or Mike Gundy necessarily, but you know, you get rid of a favorite son, a guy that loved Texas Tech, and bringing a guy in. Matt Wells is a great coach, great guy. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Just, was that a mistake? Was that a mistake? Is what I've started to say.
Well, you know, that's the same problem. Obviously, Cliff goes to the NFL and gets Kyler Murray and has all this success now. And, you know, Texas Tech has had 2 4-win seasons. And so, you know, that was a really tough, uncomfortable call that they made at the time. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough when as we've seen with Texas and other places, I mean, when people sort of start to lose faith and think maybe we can do better, maybe this is being squandered, then you make a change. And I know Kirby Hokut felt like he was getting, you know, more of a complete head coach that cared about all three phases and in Matt Wells, but you know, you watch them this season and just a lot of mistakes, just a lot of, inconsistency, coaching decisions that they made you scratch your head. It's just hard to, know. I'm sure that team on its best day is much better than the 4-6 record, but it's going to be an interesting offseason where you wonder, is there going to be more attrition? Are they going to kind of take that next step of sort of purging the roster a little bit more or what? I don't know what to make of Texas Tech right now.
I don't either. And they've been confusing. You asked about watching them this year. I mean, you watch them almost beat Texas, should have beat Texas.
Yep. Could have beat Oklahoma State.
Could have beat Oklahoma State, but got completely run out of the building by OU.
Yep.
And then, I mean, didn't even belong on the field with them. Gave up 49 points in the first half. And then this thing with Kansas.
Yeah, that's where my angst is coming from this week is just how do you play Kansas that close, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that happens. Kansas, because it's not just that this is Kansas and Kansas is an easy punchline. This is the worst Kansas team I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's saying something because I've seen a lot of really bad Kansas.
I know it in that game, especially going back and watching it, you know, there's a lot of missed chances in the red zone. There was, turnovers and kind of all the stuff you can't do if you want to give Kansas a chance. But man, it's just weird week to week. You just don't know what you're getting from them at all.
No, you don't. And it should be a very interesting offseason in Lubbock, because I think that if you're a Texas Tech fan, and I don't want to speak for Texas Tech fans, I'm not one of them, but you watch what Matt Campbell is. If you can find the right guy, you can win in this conference. You can win. You can be, and they've seen it with Mike Leach. They know that if you can get the right guy, and they can have the right culture and all those things, that you can have a lot of success. And I just imagine this is very frustrating. This has been very frustrating, a very frustrating run of years for Texas Tech fans.
Yeah, certainly. We will get to Tom Herman, obviously, with Brian. I did want one thing I wanted to bring up, since this week is kind of just makeup week in the Big 12. There are four games, but we'll see on that. One of them obviously is questionable at the moment. But I think the only implication that, since Iowa State and Oklahoma have already clinched, is really just kind of the bowl spots, right? The bowl seeds. I'll read off Stu Mandel's latest bowl projections here. Right now, he's got Oklahoma winning the Big 12, going to the Cotton Bowl to play Texas A&M, which would be pretty awesome to see.
Awesome.
He's got Iowa State going to the Alamo again to play Colorado, who's still undefeated right now. He's got Texas in the third spot going to the Cheez-It Bowl. I didn't realize the Cheez-It Bowl is the number three bowl now.
Well, it's because the Cheez-It Bowl isn't what the Cheez-It Bowl was before. They moved everything around.
Yeah.
The Cheez-It Bowl is now what the Camping World Bowl was, and what the Cheez-It Bowl was is the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. So it's just all very confusing. But
You're right. Yeah, you're right. So that would be Texas.
Yeah, the Cheez-It Bowl is what used to be Camping World. What was before that, Russell Athletic, as I called it, Walmart Sweatpants.
You did call it Walmart Sweatpants Bowl. You enjoyed covering one of those.
And it will always be the Walmart Sweatpants Bowl.
Your favorite is still the Belk Bowl, though, right? That's your favorite bowl trip you've ever covered, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, man. What a wild trip that was. Having a player on the team you cover shoplift from the title sponsor of the bowl.
From the Belk Bowl store.
From a Belk store during a shopping spree at Belk.
Yeah, shoplifting during a shopping spree is an interesting choice. So yes, thank you for correcting me on that. Stu has Texas going to the Cheez-It Bowl, what is now the Cheez-It Bowl, to play NC State and face off with Tim Beck, which would be pretty funny. He has TCU in the four spot, going to the Texas Bowl to play Arkansas. Could be a pretty good game. He has Oklahoma State behind TCU right now, which is interesting, going to the Liberty Bowl to play Tennessee, who may be going through a coaching change. And then K-State going to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl to play Penn State, and West Virginia going to the First Responders Bowl to play Tulsa, which would be actually a pretty great game.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So
I just quickly, as an aside, Tulsa is getting totally screwed this week.
Yes,
totally screwed. I don't think they were going to beat Cincinnati anyway, but this is complete crap.
Well, hopefully right now all that matters is they can get healthy for next week, right?
Right.
To replay that game. Right. So I guess the implications this week, right, are kind of, is it still kind of that 4-7? Just what's the order of it?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm interested where Oklahoma State ends up, because I was just looking this up. I mean, they've played in both the Texas and the Liberty Bowls pretty recently.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would make a difference. Actually, they played in the Texas Bowl last year, Liberty Bowl year before, and what is now the Cheez-It Bowl the year before that. So they've been in all these games. So I wonder where they line up. Maybe that's why Stu has TCU above them, just because
I wish we could flip it here too. If we could flip it and get West Virginia, Penn State, and get one of those kind of old showdowns in that region, I think that'd be pretty awesome too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That'd be great to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that stuff shakes out. It's crazy we're already here, and where it's time to pick out bowls and all that. All right, let's go into our conversation with Brian Davis from the Austin American Statesman to just talk about the state of the Texas program, where they go from here, and we'll also get into their situation this week of whether they're going to play Kansas. We're now joined by Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman. Brian, how you doing? What's going on over in your neck of the woods?
You know, listen, it's Christmas time, and I got the lights out on the grass. That's my only escape from my cell phone and my laptop and the stupid Twitter account. It's just, you know, and I'm not even going anywhere close to that campus right now.
Yeah.
Because it's haywire.
You just pulled the ladder out. You said, leave me up on this roof as long as possible.
Shove me off this roof. That would actually be doing me a favor, you know. Just let me get to the apex and then just push me. You know, that would be great.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. I guess, you know, where do we start? You know, it's Wednesday, 10 a.m. Nothing's happened today, but I think it seems like we're all sort of sitting here wondering where this saga continues. We don't know if Texas is playing this week, first of all.
Right.
But what is your sense of where we're at now that, as you've reported, the Urban Meyer coup has failed?
Definitely, and that's a good way to describe it. We can check the easy box first, and that is I don't know if this game is going to get played on Saturday or not. There's supposed to be another round of COVID testing that is completed. That was completed yesterday, and then then Texas for Big 12, you know, guidelines, they get tested again on Thursday and Friday. So I am planning to go to Lawrence this weekend. I know a lot of people that I've talked to inside the building, they want to get this game over with, quite frankly, because it's the regular season finale. But will it be played? I truly think they have to do another round of testing before they can say yes, we're doing it. But that game will be played. As to the bigger picture, you know, there's a part of me that I really never thought Urban Meyer was coming at all, and the health being the main driving factor. You know, but at the same time, I mean, I know this whole ordeal has probably hurt Tom Herman's feelings, but, you know, unless you can show me 3 national championship rings, if you have a chance to upgrade and get that guy, I think you try to do it. And the fact that it becomes public and messy, that's just the way these things go, I think. So here we are, and my gut now tells me that Tom is probably going to stay for 2021. But I do think that they are kicking the tires on some other people, just as Chris Ocone fleshes out all options.
Brian, if he comes back in 2021, I mean, is this relationship salvageable? I mean, how do you come back from this once you've, you know, now that it's public that they've been flirting with other coaches? Is he in this for the long haul, do you think?
I think it depends on whether Tom thinks he can win his way out of it, you know, because that ultimately is the final barometer in all of this, you know. They open up against a scrub team, and then they play Arkansas in week 2 next year. That's not going to be easy, I don't think. But if you can come out of the gate firing with either Casey Thompson or Hudson Card at quarterback, and you show that you've got a firm command of things, I think that the 2022 recruiting cycle would then firm itself up a little more. I mean, right now, that's one of the things that I think has really expedited this whole process was the Quinn Ewers decommit, right? That, mm-hmm. to me, you know, was the signal that you know, here's a guy who badly wanted to play for Texas, and if he backs away, oh my God, you know, the sky truly is falling, allegedly, right? So, but if Tom comes back, they win some games, they beat Oklahoma, you know, then I think bygones are bygones at that point.
By the way, the scrub that they're opening with is the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, who are currently in the CFP.
I thought it was UTEP or UT San Antonio. So it is Louisiana. There you go. Not a scrub
at the moment.
No scrub. Yeah.
The Raging Cajun fans are going to flood your Twitter mentions now.
Yeah, no. I really thought it was UTSA or UTEP.
Brian, if the Statesman, you know, made a run at Chip Brown and, you know, wanted to shove you out for Chip and then it fell through. How would you keep doing your job?
That's a good analogy.
How would you keep doing your job and feeling like, you know, these people love me, I'm going to be here a long time?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. What I would not do is I damn sure wouldn't be hitting those deadlines. I can tell you that. I would be turning stuff in, you know, all hours of the night. And I'll be like, hey, too bad. Too bad. Right?
Yep. Right.
You know, I think to your point, though, how is this handled? A lot's going to depend on Tom and his frame of mind, quite frankly. You know, there's a lot of ways you can approach it. You can joke about it. You can kind of be flippant about it. I think it's to his benefit to just acknowledge the truth. And the truth is that he was hired to win championships, and he has not done that. 31-18, 1-4 against Oklahoma, 9-10 against ranked opponents. These are not good statistics. They're just not. So it's not like Tom can, you know, come throw it in our face of, and, oh, you guys just don't know how great you have it. No, we kind of know what we've got, right? And so he is a above average coach. You can't say he's great because of the numbers just don't bear that out. And I'm telling you, I think he'd be the first to tell you that. I genuinely think he'd be the first to say, look, we have not gotten it done at the expectation level that the school had and that we had internally as well.
How do you see this from, you know, the other side of it, of Chris Delcani's position, where obviously you have a lot of people, you know, that write the checks who probably want to see a different outcome. And I don't know which coach they end up rallying around now. I don't know if you have a good feeling of who you think should be, you know, potentially the next head coach at Texas, but how do you navigate this? And I, you know, do you take a couple months here to try and find that coach that you think can take you to a top 10, you know, playoff level, or what? How do you fix this from Delcani's end?
Well, if you're Chris Delcani, number one is you are a person who hates firing people. You just hate it. It is the worst part of your job. You loathe that part of the job. So when you understand that, understand that the athletic director is coming from a place where he doesn't want to change coaches. He just doesn't. But what do you do when every major donor is blowing up your phone saying, get rid of this guy? And mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, if you want my money for the South End Zone project, you're going to do what I say. Right. I mean, that's how it works at all schools, not just in Texas, but that, you know, big money donors are BMDs for a reason. You know, they give a lot of money to fund all this stuff. Right. Sure. So Chris, I genuinely believe Chris wants to keep Tom. I genuinely believe that the donors want him out. You know, so rock meet hard place, I would say. Who can they rally around?
I don't know. Because, you know, at the end of the Charlie era, it's easy to make a move when you say, look at this guy down at Houston who's winning big and checks all the boxes, right? Not really the situation we have right now with Texas.
Correct. And also, too, it was three straight losing seasons. So sure. It made it easy to make that move. Yeah. Tom has locked in. He's locked in four straight winning seasons, just not winning good enough. And, you know, I told some people here, I said, if Tom Herman is let go, if the worst thing that he can say is that he didn't win enough football games, I'm sure he's pretty okay with that. You know, he's totally fine with that. But to your point of who would rally the troops, I just don't think there's anyone out there that moves the needle like Urban. And if you can't get Urban, then, you know, does Dan Mullen get you going? Does James Franklin get you going? I'm of the opinion, why not take a hard look at Matt Campbell? And the reason why is because, you know, all I've heard for 4 years is, you know, hey, we're getting out coached. Well, let's go look at the guy who's doing the out coaching, right? I mean, what's wrong with that? So, you know, in light of there's no other Urban Meyer, I think you have to look hard at keeping who you got.
Brian, I don't remember a hire in recent college football history that seemed more perfect or seemed like the best fit at the time as Texas and Tom Herman. It seemed like such a home run, such an obvious hire, given what he'd done at Houston, Ohio State. I guess my question is, if he can't get it done there, are there bigger structural problems at Texas that go beyond just the head coach. I mean, would Matt Campbell have some of these same issues? I guess is my question. Would anyone have these issues?
You know, the answer to that question is something that they've been searching for 10 years. You know, why does this not work? Yes, Texas has all the money, but it's not about money. Yes, Texas gets all the big recruits, but clearly they don't develop, you know, right? Is that coaching? Is that something else? I tell you what I genuinely believe is the answer. And, you know, everybody can take this for what it's worth, but I truly believe that kids who grow up in this state, they get a scholarship offer to the University of, by God, Texas. They sign, and they know that their education is guaranteed for 4 years. They live in Austin, Texas, and they think, man, I've made it. You know, my parents are happy. My family is over the moon. And this is great. But the reality is that the work is only just beginning at that point. And, you know, why don't kids develop? Because they don't have a chip on their shoulder anymore. You know, if I lived in Fort Worth, okay, and everybody had told me I wasn't good enough to go to Oklahoma or Texas, you'd be damn straight I'd have a chip on my shoulder to go out and beat some people. If I lived in Ames, Iowa, and was told, hey, you're not Oklahoma good or you're not Texas good, you can be bet I would have a chip on my shoulder, right? Yep. People in Texas, they don't have that. They just don't. And, you know, Oklahoma obviously has done better with the guys that they've got.
But how do you get that chip, I guess, at Texas? Is it just going to require the right coach to find that button to push?
I don't know. Do you take away the charter airplanes and the plush living accommodations, and you take away the silk robes? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I thought Tom really did it right. I thought Tom did it correct when he got here, you know, shoving burnt hot dogs and soggy pancakes down their gullets. Right. You know, I thought he did it right. And then they revolted. They revolted again. Oh, who the hell is this guy giving us burnt hot dogs? Right. Well, you know, and I did have a couple other people tell me, you know, if there's one thing that they learned is that you don't mess with the food. You don't mess with players' food, which I thought was a very interesting observation. But you got to get through to these 18 to 22 year olds somehow. They live on their phone. Think about this too. Because I'm dealing with this now with my own daughter who's in seventh grade. You know, if you recruit 85 people who have all they've been told all their life is how great they are, well, when someone gets in their face, they're not going to be too hip to that, right? And you know, MFing kids now is probably not the way to go. That's not the way to get through to them. You know. Some coaches have told me, well, the kids haven't changed, the adults have changed. Well, maybe that's true too. I don't know. But, you know, to get back to your question, Max, of why, and Jace, why is it not working at Texas? I mean, and I hate to use the word entitlement, but it is various forms of that.
Yeah. I mean, I looked it up yesterday since they've jumped into the top 10 a few times under Herman here over the last couple of years, and they're 3-4 when they've been in the top 10. I mean, they just haven't really handled success very well.
They haven't handled success very well. They cannot beat the low level teams very well. They don't blow out anybody, you know, they just don't.
Yeah. How weird was that, by the way, to watch that this weekend?
Stunning.
Of all the outcomes you expected in Manhattan.
I know, especially the way Deuce Vaughn ran the ball. I mean, I think that guy is going to be an exciting player to watch. You know, a hat tip to Chris Vaughn as well. But I did not expect that. And, you know, to think that they scored on 11 of 13 possessions when it counted, the fourth possession was, get rid of the game. And the only two that they did not score on was when Derek Kerstetter got hurt, and then the drive immediately after that when they went 3-and-out. Pulled it all together and put the hammer down.
Why can't it always be that easy? You know, you watch those running backs go wild. It's just hard to Hard to believe well, as soon as they're out of the race, they play their best ball. You know.
Now, I will say this. My biggest complaint about Tom all season long is that he hasn't given Bijan Robinson enough run, right? And, you know, wow, he gives him consistent carries, and he almost rips off 200 yards. So, you know, maybe I need $6 million. You know, I need $6 million. I can make these decisions too, you know?
He had career day. I think he only ended up only touching the ball like 14 times. So, you know, there you go.
The dude only averaged 19.1 yards per carry. I mean, come on, Max. Come on, Max. It's a rotation.
Let's get other guys in there. That's the damnedest thing with Texas is there's always young talent. There's always dudes that you look at them and say, you know, there's some NFL upside with these players. It's just how do you put all the puzzle pieces together? And this is why someone's going to make a lot of money to either coach them or not coach them next year, you know?
Throw your name in the hat, BD.
Listen, I can run off tackle with the best of them. I can tell these people to throw it over the middle just as easily as Lincoln Riley and Thomas.
I think you could be the politician head coach, right, who kind of delegates to the staff you put together and just you handle the BMDs.
I absolutely would. I would be great at it. I would stand up there every Monday and go, oh, Kirk, I know you're full of S. You know you're full of S. Come on now. I don't know if we're supposed to be cussing on the Athletic podcast.
You can cuss on this pod. No worries.
Okay, but that's yeah. I would be like, oh, come on now. You don't mean that question, mean old question, mean old media. You don't mean that. We love you. It's great.
Oh man. You as head coach, it scares you to death.
It scares you to death. My wife can't make cookies for shit, but I'll tell you that. I'll get up there and tell them how great they are.
I would request to move to the Texas beat if you were the head coach. So
I'd be putting my arms around you. I'd go, let's go have a drink and talk about all those mean articles you've been writing, Jason. Just come on now. You know what I would do is, by the way, I think it was Jason. I'm pretty sure it was you. Cause I think I retweeted this, the greatest, liner I've read in the last month is local tequila salesman to help Sooners on practice field. I thought that was the best thing I've read forever.
It's factually accurate.
It was factually correct. Yes.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. You know, it's going to be a weird month. Enjoy the holidays and, you know, hang in there. All right. Thanks so much to Brian for joining us. Hopefully he can get some clarity and, you know, God, who knows where Texas goes from here, Jason?
I mean, I don't envy him being a beat writer on that beat right now.
If you had to bet today, do you think Tom Herman's back next year?
Yes, I do. I do. I do. Because I sort of agree with him. I don't know where else they go from here right now.
Counseling. I think they should go to counseling. work through some problems if they're going to try and make it work, you know? All right, let's get into the picks.
Do we have to?
We do.
We've come this far.
We got to be better, man. We got to be better. I hope you did your research. Let's start with the Sooners playing a nice little makeup game at West Virginia. Oklahoma is a 13.5-point favorite.
I like the Sooners to cover because, you know, West Virginia's coming off the big loss. I think that the natural assumption would be they have nothing to play for really here, but I think they do have something to play for. They want to continue their momentum going into this. They want to get right on their offense before they play Iowa State. And, you know, they're sitting there at number 11. If things shake out, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen or that it's even likely, but there is still an outside shot. They could find their way into the top four. So I think they have a lot to play for here. So I'll take Oklahoma by over 13.
These games have always been really good. It feels like it's always at the end of the regular season that they have to go out to Morgantown. You remember the last one with Kyler Murray and Will Greer and that just epic shootout. I think Oklahoma will cover. I don't think that West Virginia's, you know, conceded this season or anything like that as much as, you know, they just got dominated by Iowa State. But, I think it's a bounce back kind of week for Oklahoma. They know that Iowa State's got the week off and they know that Iowa State's playing really, really good football right now. So I would think there's, you know, this is an easy week for Lincoln to, to push the buttons and say, this is the guy, this is a week we got to show up, guys.
Absolutely.
All right, next game. This game is currently questionable. Texas at Kansas. Texas is a 30-point favorite. Texas has previously gone to Kansas and lost, as you recall, Jason. And you know, Texas was not able to go through, you know, workouts on Tuesday. They're still shut down right now as they deal with an outbreak of cases with players and coaches. So we'll pick it and we'll just drop it if this game doesn't happen. We don't have an answer right now for it, but what do you think, Texas minus 30?
Well, I'm gonna go against everything that I've said for a lot of the last several weeks, and I'm gonna take Kansas to cover because of all the drama on at Texas, all the uncertainty about Tom Herman, all the, you know, them being shut down. I'm not saying that I think Kansas will win as they did in 2016, but I don't think that it's going to be a 30-point game. I just don't.
Okay. I love that. 30s, I mean, they've set it a good number here. I mean, 30's a lot. 30's a lot to cover. This is for a Texas team that's played a lot of close games over the years. And as I mentioned on Saturday, that was only the third time in the Tom Herman era that they beat a Big 12 team by more than 20 points. So you haven't seen it very often. So I'm going to take Texas. I think the difference for me is just they're playing pretty solid defense right now. The way they ran the ball last week with Bijan Robinson and Rashawn Johnson was just so impressive. And if they can keep it simple like that, I can't really see Texas mailing this one in, but we've been wrong on that before, my man.
As crazy as it sounds, based on recent history, I don't think Kansas is scared of Texas the way that they should be. I don't think they're scared of Texas.
Kansas sure could have won a game in Austin last year.
So I don't think they're intimidated by Texas, as crazy as that sounds.
Oh my God. I'm really tempted to take Kansas plus 30. I really am. But let's be on different sides of it. Okay. Let's make a bet it or something, right? Okay, next one, Oklahoma State, 5-point favorite on the road.
Give me Baylor straight up. Baylor wins the game, taking the Bears. Yes.
Really?
Maybe it's just recency bias because
You are down on Oklahoma State right now.
Higher on Baylor than I think a lot of people are after having seen them. And then what they did the week before, the big comeback against Kansas State. I kind of think Oklahoma State's reeling right now, and this is a time for Baylor to beat him. I think Baylor wins.
Okay. Wow. I'm torn on this one. I'm going to take Oklahoma State, but I don't feel very good about it. Especially just because this, as you saw last week with TCU, like this could just be a really, really tight back and forth game that comes down to
Oklahoma State. Got forced 5 turnovers and lost. I mean, my God. Yeah.
You don't see it. Yeah.
And I think the Baylor defense is
weird.
Good.
They are. And certainly what they did against Oklahoma has to provide a lot more confidence. Last one here, TCU went out and found a non-conference game. They're going to play Louisiana Tech at home. And this is a big line. They are a 21.5-point favorite.
You go first this time. Want you to go first this time.
I'll take Louisiana Tech plus 21.5. I think TCU will win, but I'll take Louisiana Tech plus 21.5, and I could be.
I'll go the other way. I'll take the Horned Frogs.
Okay.
Not for any real reason other than to be different than you.
Clearly, we are. We're pretty shook. We're pretty shook by what happened last week with the picks, but you know, hopefully it'll be better.
Yeah.
All right, Jason. Well, thank you for joining. Everyone, appreciate you listening as we head to the home stretch here on this Big 12 season. And we really appreciate you listening. Please subscribe to our show, One True Pod, on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review and a good rating and find our stories on The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer at theathletic.com/onetruepod. You don't just get the best college football coverage in the country, you get all of our sports coverage, so be sure to take advantage. and we will see you next week.